Bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome. The Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonnell, Julie Hayden on Manic Monday.
Who am I married to? Truth straight up.
Truth straight up. I'm married to
Chuck and Julie.
Brought to you by
Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, along with HappyTrees.co and Denver Synergenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. All kinds of stuff to talk about today. Always political, but I thought we'd do something a little different and talk about a couple of big cases that are in the news today. And we have with us our favorite law enforcement expert, forensic expert, Mark Poff, who is joining us. And Mark, we want to talk about the Idaho case.
Live from Topgolf, where he's a premier member of.
I'm live from the MGM in Las Vegas.
Whoa.
Were you there for the Bronco game, or did you just...
We had it scheduled. We always like to come out to Las Vegas during the week of Thanksgiving.
Oh, fun.
So we actually have 21 people out here, all from the family and stuff from all over the U.S.
Oh,
and
wow.
I got rid of them all. They're all kind of ticked off at me. I said, no, you guys need to all go away. I got something to do.
Hey, well, I'll tell a funny story before we get to the serious stuff. So when Chuck and I were first married, Chuck always did Vegas golf trips with his buddies, right? Annual thing, some of which they remember, some of which people are still searching for the bodies in the desert. But anyway, I was pregnant with Rev, and my due date was during one of these trips. And Chuck's friends seriously said to him, well, that's what FaceTime is for. You can FaceTime it.
I agree.
FaceTime the birth.
If you FaceTime me in the birth, and Chuck seriously thought about that for a second.
No, we can't do that.
So, anyway.
Well, I'm definitely having a good time. We were supposed to go to Topgolf today at 2, but I had to cancel.
Oh, no.
So you impacted my Topgolf schedule. But that's okay. I play enough as it is already. They're all playing pickleball or something.
Well, let's talk about, and just because you were a former El Paso County Sheriff investigator, and to see if you have any insights on this nightclub shooting. Five people shot and killed. They got a 22-year-old guy in custody and everything sealed on it. But what, if anything?
They tried to bomb his mom home, but they forgot about that.
And actually, I knew nothing about it, but my phone started blowing up here in Vegas with text messages and reporters calling me. One tried to wake me up early this morning, which was a huge mistake. And so they're desperately trying to figure out, you know, what's going on down in Colorado Springs with this shooter. What I have been told by some of the reporters is the things that they're kind of focusing in on is supposedly the sheriff's office down there, the El Paso County Sheriff's Office, had a case on them.
Right.
And then it just went away.
They just
dropped all the charges. And they sealed it. And you know, that's going to drive reporters crazy.
Right.
Because that's the last thing they want is, we can't tell you. Because then it looks like you're not being transparent. Who cares about this guy's right to privacy? Now, what I have been told is another judge at this point could unseal those records at this point, those records, and say... Now that he's out in the public eye and he's committed these other heinous crimes... We think it's important that the public understand. So I think the media should go to a judge and say, look, Your Honor, you know, he's in jail for murder, multiple murders. We need to understand as a public, you know, what this previous case was. Was there any malfeasance but corruption by the sheriff's office, the DA's office? Surprise, surprise, my two favorite agencies down in El Paso County.
Right.
You know, and what did they do? And another angle that they're going to be taking is about the red flag law. And we've talked about this in the past. I'm not a big fan, and the reason I'm not a big fan of the red flag laws is because it assumes good behavior. It assumes people are going to do the right thing, and we know that's not true.
That's why we have you guys.
Well, exactly. If everyone was going to do the right thing, we wouldn't need cops. So they're going to be writing articles saying, why didn't the red flag law take effect? You know, why didn't that supersede this or anything? And, you know, you can't arrest people.
Well, we don't know yet. I mean, I think right now,
right, we don't know.
Right now, we don't know where he got the guns. We don't know when he got the guns. There's a lot of questions out there. I am surprised that they dropped that original case, because I think that the actual call came in. The mother was renting a room at another woman's house, and I think the other woman was involved somehow too. So I could kind of see if it's a case where the mother is going to refuse to testify, but get the kid in therapy of something.
Get him in a gun class.
But they didn't actually find any bombs or something, you know? So maybe, but it seems like there was another person there. So you're right, though. I mean, obviously, though, if that had not been dropped, there's a good chance he would be somewhere in the system right now. And who knows what might have been prevented.
And if he tried to get a firearm, at least it would have hindered his ability to get a firearm.
Right. Exactly. It's a lot to come about there. And we're going to talk about that more later in the show. But I want to talk about this Idaho case. I'm sure people have heard about it. It's all over the national news. Four students, a guy and three girls, were stabbed to death. November 13th. There were two other roommates in the house. Apparently one of them is the one that called 911. And the cops seem to have like nothing on this case. I mean, I want to ask you one thing, because I've covered a case before where one person stabbed and killed five people, but the reason he was able to do it is that somebody else was holding them at gunpoint. I got to wonder, is there more than one person? I mean, how does somebody stab four different people?
They do it in London all the time.
Well, not but four different people without anybody fighting. Well, I mean, there were some defensive wounds, but
I actually heard somebody on TV that actually got it right. Okay. And said, I think it was one of the forensic guys that Fox has, a stabbing, and I've worked on numerous stabbing cases during my career, they're not clean.
Right.
You know, I would tell you, if you compared a gunshot homicide with a stabbing homicide, I would do the gunshot any day of the week over a stabbing. And if you're stabbing four people, and you saw that picture, that grisly picture showing the blood oozing down the side of the cement, because there's just so much blood, that would have been, and pardon my, well, no, it's not really French, it would have been a slippery slide event.
Right.
And we had a stabbing where an individual, they were in a fight, and the guy stabbed him right in the heart. So every time, and again, this is kind of, you know, grisly or whatever, but every time his heart beats, it was spewing out blood.
Right.
And so it just makes this huge mess. Everybody's slipping everywhere. And here's the thing about this case. I'm kind of surprised how much evidence, if you want to call it evidence, or information is actually out.
Right.
If I was in law enforcement, I'd say, sorry, guys, we're in the middle of an investigation. I can't tell you anything.
Right.
They have footprints. I guarantee you they have footprints of the murder or murderers.
Right.
Now, at this point, they've been releasing so much information that I think is way too much. I'm surprised that they haven't said, we know it's one or two.
Or three, or whatever. That's a good point. You would be able to tell how many people
by the footprints.
And usually, you know, if you hit someone in the heart, that'll do it. But usually, the first stab isn't enough. You know, they got to get some more stabs in.
Not. In fact, this guy who got stabbed in the case that we're talking about, he lived for about another 5 minutes. He got in a vehicle, and they drove him straight to the hospital, and he lit up that whole inside of that truck.
Right.
So the whole truck was disgusting. So, and they know, there's so much forensic evidence. When I first started looking into this, there's so much evidence that they have that they're not even talking about.
Okay.
And that's good. I mean, they should be talking about it. So
they should. They should be telling talk show hosts about it. No, go ahead.
Well, exactly. But either it's going to be one of two things that's going to come out of this, and hopefully this isn't going to be another JonBenet case. They either have all this information, and I theorize there's a small chance the suspect is already in jail, and or they're totally incompetent. And here's why I'm going to go back to the first part, which I kind of covered everything, right? Either they're really good or they're really bad. It's going to be one of the two. The reason I say this person might already be in jail is they seem pretty nonchalant about this investigation. Yeah. Again, either they're either like, look, we've got the guy, we're just building our case and all our evidence before we tell what we have, or they're incompetent. So it's going to be one of the two. So here's how they can have somebody in jail. This happens all the time.
It does happen all the time.
Yeah. They know the suspect, who it is. They pick them up and say, oh, you have warrants, which a lot of these guys typically do have warrants.
Right.
So they arrest them on the warrant, and then they tell the judge, hey, dude, this is our suspect. I guess you don't call a judge dude. But this is our suspect.
Don't let him on a PR
homicide.
Bond.
We want to increase the bond to keep him in jail until we can finish our investigation. And we want you to seal this. I'm just predicting the warrants that they've done have all been sealed. So the media can't get their hands, or we'd already know all this stuff.
Right.
Well, there isn't any great search going on. There's no warning everybody. But the guy with a hunting knife is killing
in the area.
Yeah.
But they say that they don't have a murder weapon. So that's interesting.
Well, that's why they've been looking in the woods, and they've been asking for surveillance tape from certain cops and things like that.
Over a week since the homicide, and now they're looking behind the house. I don't know, man. They're very calm because they're good versus they're just incompetent. Really, I think I'm leaning towards the incompetent because we've done this before too. We had a homicide scene in El Paso County. We went back three times with three separate warrants to go right back to the murder scene. But that was a sealed house. But we went back in, and it was kind of embarrassing. You know, At first we had a bullet hole in the shooting. It was an officer involved shooting through the floor. At first we took pictures of the bullet hole. And then one of the chief investigators said, "What? You got to cut that out." So they go back up, and we actually cut the section out so we could bring back a piece of wood with the bullet hole through it. Right. And then it was later on in another meeting, we're like, "What? You guys didn't get this? Go back up there and get this." So I'm really confused from that standpoint. Why? I hope this house is sealed. And they're not
the
just,
impression.
You know,
it is.
Yeah,
let me ask you this, because there was a case. I remember the Nathan Phil, who killed Omar Job, right? And initially they suspect he was one that confessed to me. He killed an African immigrant in Denver. And initially they picked him up. They knew it was him, but they picked him up on a whole other warrant. Now the whole thing got blown out of the water because then he confessed to me and he put the story on TV. So, but you're right. I mean, they were holding him. And I wonder about this case, because let me ask you this. I know in stabbings, a lot of times, as you said, it's slippery. Frequently, unlike a gunshot wound, you shoot it. Now you might get some gunshot residue on you, but in stabbings, I think oftentimes the assailant ends up getting cut as well, right?
Yes. Like OJ Simpson is a perfect example of this, but he didn't use like that hunting knife they showed that has a big hilt.
Right, it is.
And another thing, I mean, I hate to inform people this. If you look at it, they showed a picture of what they think the knife looked like. They also put a vented ridge down the knife. When you stab someone with a regular knife, you can't pull the knife back out because of pressure difference. It takes a big pull. These knives that he had, that they theorized that he used, are designed, to protect yourself so you can stab as hard as you want and you're not going to cut yourself. And two, it equalizes the pressure with these things so you can pull them back out. I mean, that's my understanding. But there, my guess is there's tons of DNA that they've collected.
I was going to say, maybe they're running DNA.
And they are. And this is another thing I wanted to say. We watch like CSI on TV and stuff. They say, "Well, let's go see what the DNA results are." Then they go to commercial and then they come back from the commercial and they have the results. It doesn't work that way. It takes a few weeks. So I'm sure they're scrambling with CBI or whoever, or not CBI, but in Idaho. And they have state police up there, I believe, that they're testing all this DNA to see if they can get a mixture. And actually I found out from doing a lot of forensics that when they talk about a mixture, that's kind of hocus pocus too. So that's a separate subject, but surely at this point we used to go, you know, those little rollers that you have to clean your clothes to get all the lint off your clothes.
Right.
Well, these kits that they have for CSI to collect little trace evidence is very expensive. So most law enforcement just buys a whole boatload of those rollers and uses those to collect. I mean, it's cheap. It's like $2 versus a $20. And so I'm sure they've gone through this house with a fine tooth comb, hopefully, and collected tons of DNA in hopes of when they do identify a suspect,
then they
have all this evidence. Now, another thing I wanted to talk about, and I know I'm kind of just going through this,
this is my
wheelhouse when we're talking about this stuff, is they're talking about all this forensics. They're going to have boatloads of digital forensics. And one thing that really interests me was the sister, I think, of one of the victims said, "Hey," she was making phone calls and she was talking about these phone calls in the middle of the night. And she released this to the media. I'm like, how is she getting this information? And what I'm assuming they're doing is, like, if I have a Verizon account, I can go in and look at my Verizon calls online whenever I want. So the dad's probably paying for the phone records or for the phone bill.
So
he has the ability to go look at the phone records. But they should not be releasing any of that, because I would tell you, I would put phone records up against a coroner any day of the week on determining the time of death. Because these kids are constantly texting on their cell phones, right, and doing stuff like she said, making these phone calls. Who makes phone calls at 2:30 in the morning?
I think it was obviously to the ex-boyfriend. I mean, I could see the cops going to the family.
Another thing, you just stepped on another landmine. This is going to be one of two types of cases. It's either going to be random or targeted. So that's why it's very critical to set up a timeline of each one of those four people's individual lives and who's pissed off at them. Now, understand, most people that just want to murder people, they'll go get a handgun or something and kill people. People who tend to stab numerous times, and again, I'd love to see the coroner's report on how many times they were stabbed. Is there one person that stabbed 50 times?
Right.
And then there's some others that are stabbed three or four times?
Right.
So I would be focusing in. Now, you got to examine everything. You got to follow the facts wherever they lead.
Right.
But I would be very interesting if one person, now, she said her boyfriend was spending the night there. I don't know, maybe a previous boyfriend or something like that. But find out what stands out in this case. And they have so much evidence, I'm sure, at this point, that they've got to be focusing in, unless it's a complete random act of violence. Charles Manson is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Not him, but some of his people went in and then randomly killed Sharon Tate and others. So that makes it a little harder. You know, if somebody's just stalking someone to just, I want to kill people.
Right.
You know, that's harder to solve.
Right.
It's a lot harder. But
let me ask you this,
though.
This is because this is your wheelhouse, too, because in a situation, there was a case. It was just, I think in 2020, there was an arson that killed a family of five in Green Valley Ranch. Right. And what they did is because they had nothing on this. Right. And it turned out to be the stupid kids had the wrong house. But they did a Google search. They got a warrant to search Google for anyone who had Googled this address. And it turned out it came back to these kids who were trying. Then they got their cell phones and it turned out they thought the phone was stolen. And so they were using a Find My Phone and it came to this address. So which was amazing to me. I mean, there's privacy issues there you got to wonder about. But on the other hand, could something like that be useful? I mean, how hard is it to do that kind?
I guarantee you, this one I'm very confident in saying, they did both a geofence and a tower dump.
What does that mean?
Now, a geofence is where they will set up, they will give Google, they can do Facebook, they can do any social media they want that collects your location. It seems like every app I get into on my cell phone now, because now on iPhones, they show you a blue arrow when someone's locking onto your location. And I see that blue arrow constantly.
Oh, God.
Now, I get it when Walmart and maybe Top Golf wants to know, you know, how far away I am from their location. But so a geofence is you give them four GPS locations, and then you tell them inside that fence. I just did a four-post fence, which would be this house. I want to know who was using anything in social media between the hours of 2 and 4 of that. They're probably a bigger window than that. So they're going to get that, which is going to tell them basically everybody who was inside that house. And then another one is a tower dump. And you have to do it for all three vendors, because you don't know, hey, all bad guys use T-Mobile.
Right.
You know? So you're basically going to get about 9 towers. And you're going to say, I want every call for the next,
you
know, for these 3 hours.
Can you just track the phone itself, or does it have to be a call or social media interaction?
There has to be something.
Okay.
Now, AT&T, as soon as I say that, AT&T just tracks their users for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
well, what do you think?
And I just found this out. Let me throw this in real quick, and I'm kind of changing this up. We'll go back, Chuck, to your question. I just found out that Google Maps, you know how they do that, where they drive by your house so you can look at houses and stuff?
Right.
So the whole time, so they're driving all these different roads. I just found this out a few days ago. Taking all these pictures so you can have all these cool things when you do maps and stuff. At the same time, they were logging every Wi-Fi that they passed.
Alcohol.
And tracking the Wi-Fis. I just had to throw that out there.
Well,
and they said it was just incidental information. Sorry, Chuck, you were going to ask a question?
Yes. I mean, one of the strange elements is there are various people in the house who slept through the murders.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't figured that one out.
Drinking heavy.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they seem to have. I would think that that, I mean, you're the investigator, but that would, unless these people are master criminal minds, that would be fairly easy for them to see the scene, then look at these two roommates over there and figure out, is there anything that and connects, I mean, is there blood on them? Are they cut? Are they whatever,
right.
You know?
And I mean, well, I mean, they could have been cutting their throats, so it was quiet. They could have duct taped them, so it was quiet, but four gruesome murders and with the two people sitting next door going, no, didn't hear a thing.
And like you said, you know, we watch these old war movies where they come up from behind and put their hands over their mouth and stab them. And then they just go down.
Right.
And that's not how it works. It's quite the struggle. They know from another release of information from a sister or the father, I think, who said that she had bruises on her. So she was actively fighting
her
assailant. Well, is she not screaming at the same time?
Yeah.
I mean, I guarantee you, if somebody stabbed me, there's going to be some noise.
Right.
And so either they're heavily intoxicated or something, or I don't want to see the layout of the house.
Right. They were on a different floor.
Seems improbable, but.
What I find is interesting, though, is that those people are not talking, which is unusual. I mean, I would think given the intensity of this case, but they're not. So I'm guessing they've had the fear of God put into them by whoever.
The cops set them aside and said, you will keep your mouth shut.
Right, because you're not totally clear yet.
Yeah, and I'm a little, again, I don't want to say I'm upset because I don't get upset over this stuff, but too much information is coming out. You know, phone calls being made. You know, there was defensive wounds on my daughter. It's like, let the cops do their jobs. But again, it's probably out of frustration because it's been over a week now. And now right. they just announced today that now they're searching the back of the house.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I get a secure house, but
you know, police officers get rusty and you know, Boulder police were famous for JonBenet. And apparently Moscow, Idaho hasn't had a murder for 7 years. So these guys are not exactly up to the tip top, you know, having come off another investigation.
Boulder PD actually asked the father of JonBenet to go look around the house and see if he saw anything out of order.
I mean, really? Go figure. Yeah. Well, let me back to the phone thing. I would think then, and you tell me if, are they able, so if they, between the geofencing and the tower dump, are they able to, so you would know the phones of the people who live there, right?
And yes, and you would eliminate phone numbers.
Right. And I was going to say, would they be able to find, of course, if I were going to go mass murder people, I don't think I'd take my phone with me just on that.
But you're probably not thinking all that well at that time.
That's not what they do. They take their phones with them every time.
Well, and that's what, would they be able to start pinning down some phone numbers to see what phones were there that didn't belong there, or how close can they get on that?
Pretty close. I mean, I'd have to look at the whole layout of the cell sectors in Moscow to see how all the sectors are laid out and stuff. The geofencing. So many people leave MapQuest or Google Maps turned on in their phone. Some even have Timeline turned on. Right. And it's constantly pinging your phone, tracking their locations. To me, if I had to bet my money on one, well, no, I couldn't bet because they're both good avenues.
You're in Vegas, so you can get a bet there.
Yeah. I've been doing a little betting. My kid won $4,000 last night, so I'm trying to live off of him right now.
Wow.
So.
better watch out for him this morning.
You would bet. You said what? That they that a big avenue.
The
was
geofencing. The geofencing is worth its weight in gold, and there is some privacy issues. It's like how many people got divorces because of 9/11. It's like they should have died in the Twin Towers, but they weren't in the Twin Towers. They were at their girlfriend's house, and so they didn't die. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, wait a minute, you weren't in this location. How many people got falsely accused on January 6th?
Right.
Because they were inside of some predetermined geofence.
Right.
You know, so we know how the government can overreach. And I definitely have seen, in fact, you know, sometime we should talk about People versus Jones, which is a huge court order. I keep bringing it up because it's so big in the industry.
Right.
Law enforcement overstates the truth. And it drives me crazy. You know, being a detective for 10 years, what I still teach at the college, you got to tell a judge, here's what shows guilt, you know, inculpatory, and here's exculpatory. And then let the judge decide which way whether you get a warrant or not. But they want to make these statements that the cell phone records clearly show that he was at the location of the homicide. You can't say that. Okay. And so I've kind of lost a little confidence in law enforcement on how they deal with some of these digital forensics, which they don't completely understand.
Right. Well, that goes back to the Google search that they did in this arson case. I mean, that was, I think they were just desperate. And in that case, it was, like you said, depending if there's no connection, it makes it harder. And the, I mean, the kids targeted the wrong house. And so there was no connection right. between them, right? And everybody's right. like, what did this family, what, you know, I mean, there was nothing. And somebody probably, and I'm sure it's a technique anymore, but they're like, well, let's just do get a warrant for Google searches. And it just turned out that they were using their phone. But I mean, that could have been, like you said, it's an avenue, but it could also lead to way astray too sometimes.
Yeah. And again, if I was a betting man, I don't think this is going to be a random act of violence.
Doesn't sound like it.
Sure yeah. I mean, it's somebody was pissed.
Yes.
And again, if they, of course, I don't want them to release this information. If they find out that one of the females or even the guy was stabbed multiple more times than the others,
right.
That's where I would be looking first.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I think in how they do it, I mean, Chuck, you had a good point. Maybe they duct tape. I mean, there's a lot we don't know here. But Mark, that was an interesting theory that I hadn't thought of, that maybe the suspect is in jail because you don't know. Are they being so nonchalant about it? Because
they don't seem to care if he's out roaming around with right. his hunter's knife that can serrate everybody. And they seem to act like he's not around.
And unless they have been assaulted, both right. that they're not sharing with us. Well, let me ask you this too, and because I've seen this before too many times covering stuff that, so you've got the family, number one, saying, not that it could be the ex-boyfriend, I'm not saying that, but the family is firm. Remember the case, what was it, where she was it in Grand Junction, where she was kidnapped and murdered, and it sounded like she was kidnapped and murdered, and then it turned out that she had a whole escort thing going on the side that nobody knew about, right? And so, I mean, a lot of times I think there can be, you know, motives that family members are, I mean, you think, you know, but are right. completely unaware right. of.
Well, alternate lifestyles, all kinds of things where they don't understand. And that's why they say, that's why you got to build a timeline.
Yeah.
And digital forensics really helps with creating timelines. And you got to walk in their shoes. They yeah. always talk about detectives walking in the shoes of the victims. You got to know what's going on in their life.
Yeah.
You know what, and intimate details of what's right. going on in their life. Because if this is a targeted attack for a reason, that's the only way you're going to really figure out or generate a list of suspects.
Right.
Well, you can remember like in Cold Blood and some other famous cases where people got killed and the whole communities were terrified because they didn't have right. the suspect in, you know, they didn't have the suspect. Here, there's no terror in Idaho, in Moscow. They say everybody's,
they seem pretty calm.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Well, how do you?
I hope the person's in custody.
Yeah.
And that's why they're calm about their investigation. But if I'm wrong, like you said, or we've all said, it may be if they have not done a homicide in numerous years, like Boulder was right. notorious for screwing that case up.
Right.
And again, and I say this all the time when I work for defense attorneys, it takes cops to do a good digital investigation to be able to do that. And if they don't, that evidence is gone. And it, yeah. it hand ties. And I think there have been some people that have actually been found guilty because of poor work by law enforcement in right. collecting digital forensics.
Right.
Right. Right. Well, you're right. And again, I go back to still another question I have is one or two people, and you have a really, really good point that they probably already have an answer to. And unless somebody got lucky. So,
well, let me tell you about Woodland Park real quick.
Yeah.
The Barrett case, law enforcement, when Channel 5 News came to me and asked me to look through some information that they had gotten, they said that law enforcement said, hey, you know, her phone just magically pinged in Idaho with nothing in between. And that's what they told me, was that, hey, law enforcement is saying this. Then later on, when they arrested and released all this information, they said, oh, no, we had clear pings all the way from Woodland Park all the way up to Idaho. I'm like, the cops lied?
No,
so I'm really concerned that, you know, the information that this chief of police of Moscow is releasing, it does, everything's not syncing together like a good puzzle.
Okay. So could be. And I've covered cases too where the cops just like lie, and you're like, oh, one time too, it was another funny case where it was a homicide, and I was talking to the detective Tom Haney. He was head of homicide in Denver. And sometimes as a reporter, you got to ask the right questions because I was right. saying, what is it, foul? Because we were trying to decide to cover it. So was it foul play? Was it suicide? He goes, well, he said it's kind of, I can't really say. And then I just said, well, was there any evidence leaning one way or the other that it was a homicide? And he said, well, the person was cut up and put in the refrigerator. And it's kind of
probably not a suicide. Probably not. So somebody needs to ask the Moscow cop.
If I had said follow up, I would have been like, well, cops don't know, And cops play those kind of games too, a little bit.
I would specifically, if I could ask him one question, I would say, do you have anyone in custody who might have been involved in this?
A person
homicide?
Of interest. Is a person of interest.
Yeah. Is there anybody currently in your or any law, detention facility
anywhere exactly
that you believe might be involved in this homicide? And if he goes, well, I can't answer that question, then I'd be, all right, I'm going to chill for a little bit and give you another week or two.
Yeah. And then we'll see. All right. Well, Mark, hey, listen, let's go back to Topgolf and catching up with your son.
Spending your son's $4,000 he won on Sunday Night Football.
Exactly. All right. Hey, good talking to you guys.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
All right.
This is from Charlene, Mark. She says, you're brilliant. She said, this is 10 times better than 2020. So
she needs to tell my wife that because I don't think she. All right, you guys have fun. I'm going to go back and start gambling some more.
All right, go for it.
What does he mean, Google drivers logging into our Wi-Fis plus geofencing and cell tower dumps? I guess for another show. Okay, Charlene, I can complain. Oh, do you want to go ahead real quick, Mark?
All right, just real quick.
You're never going to get out
driving down. They're driving down every road in the neighborhood to take pictures of your house for Google Maps. At the same time, they have a Wi-Fi in their vehicle that's powerful enough to reach the Wi-Fi in your house. Whenever these Wi-Fis, they're not going to connect, but it will track, and then it's logging in Google that the Wi-Fi at this location has this IP address, or not IP, has a, I call it, you caught me off guard.
So, for instance, when you go someplace and you log on and you want to log on Wi-Fi, it has all of the various names of essentially the network. So that's what you're talking about, right?
Right. And the phone companies use this exclusively to further determine, like when they're trying to figure out what your phone is, there's a thing called Wi-Fi enhanced geolocation. I hope I got that term right. So in other words, what they're saying is we know that Wi-Fi is located at this person's house. So if you're connected to that Wi-Fi, we know where you are.
Right.
So they're using this. And so Google Maps has created this huge database of where all these Wi-Fis are.
Wow. Now, Charlene says the networks, but not the IP address.
IP addresses typically change because most of our homes are dynamic IPs. They're not static. So I think it's called I can't believe this is eluding me, but I've been gambling too much. There is a unique ID, a MAC address. And it's not like Mac, like in Mac laptops. It's called a MAC address. They're documenting all this and the GPS coordinates of that Wi-Fi address, of that Wi-Fi actual box. So why do they look for that?
Right. Yeah. And now then geofencing and cell phone tower dumps real quick. Charlene, we'll get you caught up. What's geofencing?
Geofencing is where you provide any vendor like Google or any social media app that tracks locations. You provide them four corners of an area based on GPS coordinates, and they'll tell you during a date range who was inside that fence.
Okay.
This was used exclusively on January 6th. The government went all in on this one.
Right. And then
dumps are all the possible, like you take a certain location, like my house.
Right.
What all towers from every vendor could possibly be used at my house? And then give me every cell phone that used that tower at that date and time.
Now, can you turn any of this off? How do you turn it off? Can you turn it like it's more than just the location? Like if you turn off your track, my phone, it's going to still find you.
Whenever you use the phone, you have to use a tower. So the answer is no.
Okay.
For geofencing, you're selectively turning this on. So the answer is yes. You can turn all, you'd have to turn it off for timeline, for Facebook, for
every single app.
And if you go look in your phone right now and look on what you have turned on for location, you will freak out. Really? A lot of apps are getting your locations.
They are. Wow. What about a VPN? Will that turn off the tracker? Will VPN?
Ooh, VPN. That is a long conversation, but VPNs are very good for hiding your location.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Well, now we'll let you go. All right.
Now we know how to hide our location.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thanks,
all right, Mark. Have fun.
See you later. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. That is a whole other show, the tracking that they do. One interesting kind of side topic, and then we'll get back. Okay, Sandra's like, okay, we need Mark back on again. We absolutely will. And then we'll go check what we have turned on for location. The way I understand it.
We should have a whole show, how to disappear.
How to disappear.
And we'll disappear right in the middle of it. Something like that.
The networks, I mean, do that. I did a story on it because at the time, child pornographers were using it. It was an interesting case. So you can drive around, like I said, you know how like if you're at a coffee shop or something like that, right? And you sit there and it you want to click on the Wi-Fi and it shows all of the list of networks and almost all of them are password protected, right? But if they're not password protected, anyone can just log on to them. And That's what at the time child pornographers were doing, right? And so we did a story. It was really interesting. We just kind of drove into a neighborhood and kind of I turned on my laptop, right? And there was a network there and it was from somebody's house and it wasn't password protected. So I went ahead and logged on to that. And I think we downloaded the Star Spangled Banner or something, but what child pornographers were doing was downloading child pornography. And the reason this all came to light is we're covering a story where some poor guy got arrested by the FBI for child pornography because somebody was doing that from his network. Wow. He was like, what? I mean, and then they were able to go on his computer and find, that there wasn't anything.
They indicted him, convicted him, and he's still in jail.
Oh. So the thing is just you do at the very least you need to have it password protected. You can't completely disappear. Yeah, it's crazy the kind of stuff they can track. But switching gears a little bit.
Let's not switch gears total.
I wanted to talk about the
nightclub shooting and everything else. So it just shows where the Republican Party is going in Colorado. There's a guy named Ron Weinberg. And he was chairman of the Broomfield County Republican Party. He'd be sending you, we're in Adams County, it wouldn't make any difference. He was always sending you notifications from Broomfield County. And Ron's a big, tall, slightly balding, but very good-looking guy, lots of energy. Most Republican events, it's a lot of old people. What did he say? And Ron's like, but everybody is pretty sure that he's just a Democrat. That he's, one of those famous people who decided to latch on to the Republican Party because it's such a schmuck event and he can take it over.
Priola.
But that's just a theory. It's not a fact. So today I got, and Hugh McCain, who was just a huge rhino, died. And
he was a House Minority Leader
and just famous for working with Democrats to screw Republicans. So he died. So they had a vacancy committee and they appointed Ron. So now Ron's the
minority leader.
No, he's not the minority leader. He's the representative for District 51.
And Hugh McCain's old district.
Representative-elect because a widow gets to do it for a month or something. So then I got an email from him and I'm one of millions. I'm sure he sent it out to.
I did not get it.
Well, then see,
I'm not in.
Special. And it's got a big banner on top of CBS News, all color, 5 dead in Colorado LGBTQ club shooting. So he writes to me, Colorado House Republicans are deeply saddened by the incomprehensible violence and loss of life that occurred last night at Club Q, our favorite place in Colorado Springs. On all those affected directly or indirectly in the LGBTQ plus community to know we mourn with them, we, the Imperial we. Violence has no place in civilized society, really. We are grateful to those patrons and law enforcement who risked their lives to subdue the attacker and save many more lives. We will overcome this tragedy and show the rest of the nation what it means to be Colorado strong. Okay. I am saddened by this tragedy, switching from the we to the I am saddened by this tragedy and ask that you take a moment, you personally take a moment to honor those who lost their lives and pray for all those affected by this senseless violence. In unity with patriotism, Ron Weinberg.
Good grief. Charlene, exactly, Charlene. Why does everybody have to make a virtue signaling statement? Because here's the thing on this. Of course it's sad. Of course everyone's sorry. I get, like you said, if you're the president, if you're the governor, if you're Lauren Boebert, whose district it is in. I mean, because this day and age, everybody's got to put their little thing out to show that, by God, they are on the right side. It's just like, shut up. Of course you're sad. We're all sad.
Well, how many people died on the highway this month? They were sad for them and their families.
Exactly. Their kids. Like Lori Lightfoot in Chicago says she's sick and tired of this. Never mind that 639 people have been killed in literally Chicago so far. That's okay. It's just ridiculous, the virtue signaling. And it is why social media is destroying the universe, because it's that kind of thing. But you're right. I mean, it's like, I don't understand this too.
So they massage that, you know, all the little groupies that Ron belongs to, I think, a group like Landmark Communications in Georgia that teaches Democrats that are running Republican districts. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know.
And also make a virtue signaling statement about vaccine injuries. Exactly. And then Sandra saying, agree, so I should turn off a radio program this morning because that's all he talked about is a virtue signaling. Because here's the thing on this. That's because it's kind of tied together. I don't know if you guys noticed this. But thank God, CBS, well, first, CBS took themselves off of Twitter because it was so outrageous and they were afraid. And then like less than 24 hours later, they came back on and said, okay,
not
we're back
so
on. Yeah, because who knew even, right? But so then Catherine Herridge, who is a good reporter.
She
can be good.
She's insufferable.
She did a story over the weekend. You're going to not believe me when I tell you this, because it's so hard to believe, that Hunter Biden's laptop from hell was not Russian disinformation, that it was actually true. The story that CBS had mocked, Leslie Stahl mocked President Trump about for talking about it, right? And all they did is they cut and paste a Miranda Devine story.
No. She brought on, because I watched it, she brought on their own former CIA sleuth, who had gone through the ones and identified voice tracks on things between Hunter and his father and stuff, and all the other ones. And kind of, are you sure this is Hunter's? And he said, yes, I am sure. Two and a half years later
to follow up the Hunter Biden laptop story and decide it was true. It took him less than 30 seconds to start interviewing experts saying that this whole crime, of course, is based on hate speech. It's all because of hate speech, right? Now, it may be. It may not be. We don't know. But I mean, that's the hypocrisy of it. And so he's issuing this statement. You know, again, the only reason he's issuing the statement is to virtue signal. If there had been five people, I don't know if they put out a statement like this for other things, right?
Ron puts it out for everything because he's your new leader. I mean, Ron is, you know, just remember where you heard it first. Ron will be your next Walker Stapleton.
Yeah.
Whatever else.
It's kind of like, remember the Pulse nightclub shooting? Initially, there was all the outrage, and then it turned out, when actually the facts came out, that yes, it was still terrible, and yes, it was still tragic, but it had nothing to do with the nature of the club. It was just near the guy, I think, for some reason, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't know what the motive is, and it could indeed turn out to be a hate crime. On the other hand, it could just turn out to be
It could be he just hated the people, so he killed them. I mean,
and it could just be I'm going to go with crazy. Okay. CBS that took 2.5 years to validate the Hunter Biden laptop story immediately comes out. And you see all these experts, right? Let's find a real expert who would say, well, I don't know how we could comment on this because we don't really know what the motive is.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So how can we comment that hate speech? And and then they find a picture of the kid's grandpa, right, with a MAGA hat on. So that's all it takes. It's just, you know,
it was Donald Trump hate speech that killed these people.
Right, right. Oh, yes. Let's see. Possibly Jacob or maybe something more sinister. Oh, they're watching. Charlene, as they're talking here, watch the conspiracy theory with Mel Gibson. And from Sandra, Dan Bongino interviewed the fellow that had Hunter's laptop. Maybe we could get him on. It was fantastic. That'd be great if we could. But you're talking about the poor Mac repair guy.
The guy with the FBI said,
if you talk about this, we're going to get you. But you're right. I mean, it's that kind of virtue signaling that just... you know, I don't know. One thing about social media is I guess it makes everybody feel like they're the most important thing in the universe and that their opinion, everybody's just breathlessly waiting to hear.
Ron wants you to take a moment of silence. So you better darn well take that moment of silence.
Yeah, exactly.
Ron feels that you must.
Some from Charlene. So obvious the attempt to isolate conservatives through crisis events. Exactly, Charlene. Whether it has anything to do with anything. Because you know, the other thing that nobody is getting to the bottom of is still the Paul Pelosi attack. That is so obvious. You've got one affidavit from the Justice Department saying Paul Pelosi opened the door. You've got another sworn affidavit from the DA's office saying, saying that the cops opened the door, right? The other way around.
The DA says that Ron did it. The Justice Department says that somebody else did it.
It's clearly a discrepancy, but you see zero curiosity from anybody about that. And the one reporter who showed some curiosity about it from NBC has now been suspended.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what they do for people who ask questions.
For pushing through.
So it's
that's got to be stopped.
It's just so disgusting.
Hello?
You know, one of the, Jacob.
Yep. I just want to weigh in on one thing. I'm going to make a bet with you that this thing in Colorado Springs was a lover's quarrel and that everybody knew everybody. What's going to come out.
Here's a reason I think that you could be right on that, because nothing has come out, right? Normally in cases like this, now maybe this kid
got kicked out had of the
club. Had no social media presence. I mean, normally they're all over it. They would have talked a million kids who went to school with them. They would have talked to all kinds of other people. Do you know what I mean? And if there was anything that came out besides a picture of his grandpa in a MAGA hat that they could use to condemn conservatives, I think we would have seen it. So I'm wondering if you could, that to me
I think he's got a good
point. You could have a very good point there.
Threatened his mother. They knew all about it.
Right.
He was in jail. He got out on the Soros deal, you know, like they have in New York, where everybody goes out with no head.
Well, and then they just dropped the case.
Yeah, it's sealed.
And it's just coming closer to Colorado. It's here now. And where's Phil Weiser? Where's Phil Weiser all of a sudden?
Yeah, he's in Los Angeles.
Really. Well, he'll take it over as soon as he thinks it's politically expedient, right?
He's a Soros guy, so.
Yeah, he is.
We'll know by how quickly they drop it or follow up on it, right? What the deal is. If they drop it and move on, then because here's the thing. Anymore, it has to do with, does it fit their narrative or not? Right.
That's the thing about Ron's. It fits his narrative somehow to show that he's compassionate, not about people getting killed, but about LGBTQ+. That's what he wants to convey, that he, unlike other Republicans, not to mention that he has compassion for them, especially when they're murdered.
No, you could be right, Jacob. Let's put it this way. That would not shock me, because I have been surprised at how little has coming out. Because when you look at all the news stories, right, normally they have what we know about the suspect, right?
Yep,
there's a little teeny articles there. All of the rest are like what we know about the victims. So you could have it there. So, hey, thank you for the call.
Thanks, Jacob.
All right. And this from Charlene. Exactly. Everything the mainstream media is filtered into how they can make it fit their narrative. And then when it turns out that the facts do not fit their narrative, then they drop it like a hot potato. We're talking about why all of a sudden did CBS decide to go with the Hunter Biden laptop story?
Because they have to cover the hearings now. If the Republicans hadn't won the House, you wouldn't be hearing anything. Now that they're going to have the hearings, they have a tough time going, well, we don't know whether anything they're presenting has any validity because it has hallmarks. No, they looked too asinine. I mean, even for them. And Catherine Herridge will look asinine. I mean, last time Catherine Herridge was pushing the wonderful...
Afghan withdrawal. That's good.
She had an in with the Pentagon.
Always being hopeful. There's a reason for hope then, because you're absolutely right. Because the Republicans did win the House. So they are going to have these hearings. So some of these news organizations, they're going to have to continue to start ignoring massive stories that are out there that other people are covering. Yeah, right. And like you said, makes them look too stupid. So they have an
investigation about clear Russian, having all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation. You can't do that. Even those fools can't do that.
I mean, well, they could. Maybe we'll see. I mean, because the other ones haven't.
Well, they'll say, yeah, well, we follow CBS.
We'll follow CBS. Well, and thank God that they're back on Twitter, you know. And real quick, because we got just about a minute here, what do you think? I don't think Trump is going to come back on Twitter. Number one, it's got Truth Social. Then I read a thing, which I think is true, that he's got a contract with Truth Social that says he has to do all of his postings there first. And to me, if you're Trump, why go back there and risk them taking you off again? I'd just be like, I don't need you. I mean, you know what I mean?
It doesn't really matter if he's on it or not, because he can go to Rumble, then somebody on Rumble will put it on.
Right.
Put it on.
But it is kind of fun watching Elon Musk.
He's just tearing them up.
Whatever happens, at least in the meantime, it's fun. Yeah. You know? And when you look at it, it's a conservatives who have the sense of humor and the funny memes. The libs are just like freaking out. So that's going to be the downfall of the Democrat Party. No sense of humor.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Mark Poff. He's great as always.
That's right. And thank you to everybody who follows and participates on Zoom. We love all of you guys. Great guys at BBS. Remember, catch all our shows at chuckandjulie.com. We'll see you Wednesday.
Bye-bye.